And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show here on Highland Radio. It is just turning 5 minutes past nine on this Monday, the 2nd of December. You're very welcome along to the programme. And just to catch up on what we were talking to Lee Gooch about just before 9 o'clock, thank you so much for all of your interaction and feedback as it relates to the weekend's local general election coverage. We were down at the Aura and it was in no doubt a marathon. We stuck there throughout Saturday. I think we're on air for 17 or 18 hours on Saturday and then on Sunday for another 16 hours. But we got there in the end, actually. Fair play to the staff down there. Got it all done and dusted in the early hours of this morning. It's just, I suppose, 7 hours ago since we switched off or signed off from the Aura Leisure Centre. And as I said to Lee Gooch a little earlier on, and I can't speak for everyone, but maybe I can, it was an absolute privilege to be in a position or to have the job or the platform to be able to do such what feels like a significant thing in keeping people in touch with democracy, those of you who were interested in it. And it was great fun. We had obviously all of our listeners listening and texting in throughout the course of the weekend. We had a great crew, thousands of you watching across our social media. We stream this show, as we are doing right now, across YouTube, the X platform, Facebook, and on our website. And between all of that, we were registering more views than some programs that have been on regular telly. Do you know that sort of way? So that was the level of kind of involvement and participation, which was fantastic. And when all is said and done, the people have spoken, albeit just slightly less than 60% of the voting population in Donegal. Piers Doherty topped the poll, of course, one of the best, biggest sort of returns for any politician across the country. He certainly is a vote getter. Páirc McLoughlin, his running mate, was not too far behind him. Both of those were elected in the early hours of Sunday morning. And then we waited and we waited and we talked and we filled. And throughout the whole Sunday, it was really, really interesting. The ebbs and flows. Where's it going to go? Who's going to get in? Who's going to miss out? The one thing when you're there, you sort of are privy to the emotion of it. You know, you can see the nervousness, you can see the confidence, then you can see the, oh, I was overconfident, we're not going to get in, and it on and on and on and on it went. And you had, three nervous camps. Obviously, Pat the Cope Gallagher, it was clear on Saturday night into Sunday morning that he was going to go head back to the Dáil. But then it came down to sort of a situation whereby there were 3-2, and 3-2 don't go, does it? It doesn't go. And as I say, ebbed and flowed. Charles Ward from 100% Redress, he was a real machine in terms of soaking up transfers right across the county. It really was quite remarkable. And he really was the transfer king, a title he took from Thomas Pringle, who missed out. I don't know, many of you out there would be very fond of Thomas Pringle, the same as many of you out there are fond of all of the candidates and former TDs or current TDs. But he missed out, so that's the end of Thomas's time in the Dáil for now, at least. It was a nail-biting experience, I imagine, for Charlie McConnell Logue. It was down to the wire. But in fairness to Niall Blaney, when Niall Blaney called the figures early on, it played out like that. There was a moment where Nicky Bradley sort of leaped over Noel Jordan, and that kind of put Thomas Pringle in quite a bit of bother, and their pathway was kind of unravelling from there. But as it played out, anyway, the last two seats then were taken by 100% Redress, Charles Ward, and also then Fianna Fáil's Charlie McConnell Logue. He is back in government. I'll just read some of the newspapers this morning. Derry People, Donegal News, they're slightly disadvantaged in they have to go to press before, obviously because it's such a late finish, before the conclusion of matters. Louise Doyle writes, while counting continued in the general election at the Aura Leisure Centre in Letterkenny last night, elation and misery emerged as running mates. Nice turn of phrase. Sinn Féin returned two of its three candidates, with Piers Doherty elected on the first count late on Saturday night, having topped the poll with 18,898 first preference votes, far exceeding the quota of 12,771. Pádraic McLaughlin eased over the line, as I mentioned, a few hours later when he garnered 3,296 from Pearce Doherty's Slurpers votes of 6,127 to see him elected on the second count on 13,095 votes. Fine Gael have suffered a bruising defeat, with history most certainly made in Donegal as the party has failed to elect a TD to the Dáil for the first time since the 1930s. And I ran through much of the rest of it. I presume we might talk a little bit about that a little later on. I don't know if there's apathy in relation to that, but I'm also conscious that many of you are tuning in that are regular listeners that perhaps listen to none of that coverage. So we'll try and get the balance right for you today. The Derry News this morning, a large crowd attended a rally aimed at bringing communities together in their opposition to gender-based violence over the weekend. The Reclaim the Night rally and march was held on Saturday evening as part of a 16 days of activism against gender-based violence taking place across the north. The march was one of several actions that came out of a special meeting of Derry City and Strabane District Council recently to discuss the recent attacks in the city and district, when it was agreed that the council would endorse 10 key actions presented by the Foyle Women's Information and other community organisations. On to the tabloids now. On to the Nationals now, I beg your pardon. The Irish Times: Labour and Social Democrats wary of joining Fianna Fáil Fine Gael coalition. I was overly, maybe hyper-focused on local situations. Fianna Fáil had an amazing election. They'll be very, very pleased with how they fared. Fine Gael are in a decent spot as well, as is Sinn Féin. There's an awful lot of sort of, I suppose, reflection on the various campaigns. But the bottom line is the current government is going to be just one or two shy of being able effectively to enter government on their own. Clearly they won't, right? Because you need others to support you. So there's a bit of a buffer. You know, maybe someone might lose the whip. Maybe there might be a vote of confidence. Maybe, you know, there's other reasons as to why you need a good group there with you as well. But the bottom line is the government has been returned. The people have said, those that wanted to vote have said, this is what we want for the next 5 years. And signs, amid signs of wariness in both Labour and the Social Democrats about joining a Fianna Fáil Fine Gael coalition, newly elected independent TDs have been declaring their willingness to support a new government. Because I presume they go in there with a wish list, don't they? So that's what they're going to try and do. They're going to try and deliver for their areas. As counts continued last night, Fianna Fáil is certain to be the largest party in the new Dáil, with its seat numbers expected to be in the mid to high 40s. And Fianna Fáil also won the largest share of votes with 21.9% of the total, with Fine Gael expected to win a slightly lower number of seats, likely to be in the late 30s or perhaps reaching 40. A coalition of the big parties, the big two, is now seen to be two of the big three, is now seen to be most politicians, by most politicians, as inevitable. Depending on final counts, the two parties are likely to be within a handful of seats of a Dáil majority of 88. However, it is much less clear who might provide the third part of such a coalition. And I suppose the Soc Dems at 9, the Labour Party 8, that was the state of affairs when the paper went to print. They might want to build on that and see how they can progress. There is a vote even for Social Democrats here. It's not huge, but you can see that there is potential for them to build. You know what happens when a smaller party goes in with the big two? We've seen what happens. The Green Party, one person so far elected, according to the front of the paper here. So we'll see. It's different for independents because they can go in with a wish list, deliver for their constituents, or at least be seen to be doing so. And there you go. Staying with the Greens, Roderick O'Gorman will be the only Green Party TD in the Dáil, as he saved his party from total election wipeout last night. So ain't do now are bigger than the Greens. 100% redress are Fine Gael's Emma Curry and People Before Profit Solidarity's Ruth Coppinger as the TD for the area. So there you go. Hutch lost out. He was close to getting in. This is Jerry the Monk Hutch. He's ruled out a run for the Aris. But why would he? What would the platform be he for running for the Aris? He got a relatively tiny, not a relatively tiny vote. I mean, he was in with a chance, I suppose. I just don't think the tabloids want to let him go. Do you know what I mean? What would be the context for him running for the Aris when he can't get a seat in his own constituency? But anyway, They've asked him the question. He's ruled out a run for the Irish, but admitted he enjoyed running in the general election. He told reporters who gathered around him in a large scrum yesterday, "I love running. I've been running all of my life." Hutch, who was recently allowed to travel back from Spain while on bail for money laundering charges, was in the mix to secure a seat in Dublin Central until the final count. It was eventually won by Labour Party's Marie Sherlock, who is has ties actually to this part of the world. On to, and in fact, we don't have all the papers today. I would imagine papers were going late to press, and that means they're late getting up here, if they ever get up here at all. If the truth be told, that's the only reason I can imagine why we're so shy on newspapers here. But Kirsty Allsop is the latest figure to accuse Greg Wallace of inappropriate behaviour amid backlash over the MasterChef presenter yesterday, blaming middle-class women of a certain age for the controversy. He was in a hole. He got his shovel out over the weekend and started digging like no one's business. Wallace, who's 60, left the BBC programme on Thursday after claims were made by 13 people that he made a number of inappropriate sexual comments. Speaking in a video posted on his Instagram page, he said, "I can see the complaints coming from a handful of middle-class women of a certain age. Just from Celebrity MasterChef, this isn't right." Presenter Kirsty Allsop, best known for Channel 4 property show Location, 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 responded to his remarks by claiming that Wallace made unprofessional comments about a sex act when they were filming a pilot for a TV show. And as I say, there's quite a number, there's quite a number of people making the same accusations. It's another, I can't imagine him being seen on the TV much into the future, because it's not like they'll be contested in a forum whereby he'll ever be vindicated, if that makes sense. So I'd say his career is pretty banjax, certainly on the BBC, ITV, etc. So this week, we are at the start of December now. So this week, we have a couple of competitions running for you. We've got a really nice one, which I wouldn't mind right now, actually. This week's show, with thanks to the Silver Tassie Hotel and Seascape Spa, we're giving you the chance to win their Pamper Me Please package worth €130. The luxurious 2.5-hour spa package includes an aromatic steam session and cocoon room, a hot towel foot and back cleanse, a stress-relieving back massage, a Yonka facial with face and scalp massage, a pressure point foot massage, and snooze room relaxation time with refreshments. Now, to be in with a chance of winning this fantastic prize on Friday, just simply answer this question. Which Christmas song mentions a one-horse open sleigh? Which Christmas song mentions a one-horse open sleigh? Is it A, Jingle Bells, or is it B, White Christmas? And to be in with a chance, it costs you nothing, just WhatsApp us, or text for that matter. But text to WhatsApp your name, sorry, your answer, your name and address to 086 60 25000. Which Christmas song mentions a one-horse open sleigh? A, Jingle Bells, or B, White Christmas? And thanks to our friends at the Silver Tassie Hotel and Seascape Spa, you could win the Pamper Me Please package, which is very, very exciting. And I'll come back to that when the writing's a little bit bigger. It's another competition we have in association with Cadbury. Right, morning, Greg. Did you get any sleep? You'll need buckets of coffee. That comes in from Steve. He did get sleep, of course. I have it. It is, yep. Highland was fantastic during the election. Just excellent and so interesting. Thank you all so much. Thanks for your lovely feedback. I do appreciate it. Hi, Greg. You did an excellent job with keeping us up to date with the counting. We listened to it all. Well done. I was very disappointed in Charlie when you interviewed him after 11. He let himself down. He was taking a personal swipe at you. Held it well. Good work, everyone. But you know what? It's everyone's entitled to have their say, and that's fine. That was his view. Hi, I feel it's a miserable result for the main opposition party running against an apparent unpopular government, some of whom have been in power for around 13 years. With all the unresolved issues, also there is an additional 14 seats. Well done to all the presenters. Thanks. Thanks you very much as well. But again, I'm sorry to be repeating myself, but I said ages ago in this show that the two parties are popular, and it was likely that they would form the next government. Nothing about this surprised me, because a lot of people are okay and are happy with the way things are, and that was the result. Now, people might not like it, some might like it, but the reality is those who do like it came out and voted in greater numbers, and that is, for what it is, democracy. Right, we'll be back with more. In fact, our first guests on the show after this break. Michael Doherty is a lead campaigner in the Defective Bloc campaign, previously MAG PRO, and just getting some reaction to yesterday's events at the Ora Leisure Centre. What are the emotions this morning, Michael?
Good morning, Greg. How are you doing? I would say it's bittersweet this morning is how I would describe it. First thing I want to do is congratulate Charles Ward, soon to be Deputy Charles Ward TD, and I think that's an absolutely momentous result for himself, for the hard work of the 100% Redress Party, and I think that's a dream come true from a campaign perspective. It came at no loss to Sinn Féin either in terms of the TDs, and I know there was sensitivity around the Patrick McLaughlin might that damage, and that didn't pan out to be a concern at all, which is what my own feelings were as well on it. So that came through, and I think we've got a very strong message from Donegal to Dublin, bearing in mind that we have a situation where we have McConnell beaten by Ward, you know, a novice beating a sitting minister, and then they tell us that there's no issue with the DCB scheme as far as Donegal and the other affected counties is concerned. I think that says a lot there.
Yeah, but the electorate came out and returned Charlie McConnell Ogue. He polled higher than the redress candidate in Inishowen. So it's an endorsement, really, too, of his stance as well, that this is a scheme that needs ongoing review, but it's a scheme that clearly, in the eyes of the electorate, is not as bad as some have been making out.
Yeah, I think this is why it's important that Charles Ward's down there as an affected homeowner, is living it, the lived experience of a homeowner down there. And, you know, there will be the independents down there, there'll be others he'll be able to talk to and hopefully try and influence as well and get a body of weight in behind, you know, the rights of what it is that the campaign has been demanding all along. And that's a proper 100% redress. The difficulty and the bittersweet part comes from is that Sinn Féin didn't do as well nationally as what we had hoped for. If they had of Charles Ward would have been down pushing on an open door. At the moment, he's going to be down pushing on the same doors we've been pushing all along. The doors that even Joe McHugh tried to push on to try and get penalty-free downsizing and transfer of eligibility, which was going to cost the state nothing. And they wouldn't even see him right on that. So it's going to be a massive learning curve for Charles Ward as a new TD. But I believe he's got the passion, he's got the fire in his belly, and he'll make his voice heard down there. As far as the Charlie McConnell bit is concerned, I think we have to acknowledge the fact that he scraped in here, Greg. That's the reality of it. He scraped in here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the machine that is the Fianna Fáil party, a government party, a sitting minister. I think when we take all that into account, you know, Charles Ward was up against Goliath here, you know, and I think he's come out the right side of that.
Yeah, but Charlie McConnell Ogue also, to try and be fair, Michael, was up against Goliath as well. You know, we know that defective concrete is not just an initial issue. We know it's around much of Donegal and in many, many other counties, if not all of them. Who's to say how this might transpire? And in the face of all of that, and living amongst the houses that you talk of, whilst you can frame it that he's scraped in, at the end of the day, he's in. And that's the democratic will of the people. And I know you're not questioning the democratic will of the people, but it is going to be, and it has to be seen as a vindication of him and what the government has delivered here in Donegal.
I think we you know, as a people of Donegal, I honestly have to say, I think we let ourselves down here in this election. I do. You know, we were sitting at a 58% turnout there, which was the national average. We should have been sitting at 75% turnout for the issues that we have in Donegal, the issues that we'll be dealing with for the next 5 and 10 years regarding defective concrete blocks. And, you know, again, that, you know, you could call it apathy. You could call it we'll leave it to somebody else to do it. We did try to remind people of the need you know, to get on this bus, because it's 5 years before the next bus comes around here. And, you know, it didn't get the response that it should have got overall. And with some parts of Donegal in particular, that was very, very poor in turnout. And when that tends to happen, you find that you've got, you know, underdogs, the likes of what the defective concrete block end would have been, just didn't, you know, the people that was needed, the neighbours that were needed to come out and support those that are affected at the minute. And I'm saying at the minute because there's quite possibly the people that didn't come out to vote will find themselves affected in 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, and 10 years.
But many of those
and then
people
be looking back to see what we could have done.
Yeah, but many of those people feel they probably did their duty in fairness, Michael, because if they were so inclined to vote for an end-to-end scheme, many of them probably did turn out and voted for Sinn Féin. You know, even some leading people in the campaign were endorsing Sinn Féin and Charles Ward, don't get me wrong, but many of them were saying, you know, Sinn Féin are the party that could be in government. They're the ones that could deliver end to end. You know what I mean? And the big
fair.
Turnout the
That's
big
fair.
Turnout for Sinn Féin could be the same people who were motivated, did get out and made up for those who maybe were apathetic about things in general. We don't know that really.
Yes.
I mean, you can look at the figures, but my point is that many people who you're talking of probably did go out and they thought, right, I'm sitting in this house now, I have a choice. I can send one person down to Dublin or I can vote for the party that, if they get into power, is promising end to end.
Yes, but only 58% come out is my first point. And that should have been much, much higher for a county of the level of issues that we had around effective concrete blocks. But the other point I want to make out here is regards the push for Sinn Féin. And certainly I pushed that and I know Paddy never pushed that. And there's no apology needed on that front. And the reason simply is this. We've said all along for the last couple of years, from come June 22, when all our amendments were through to the one side by the current government, the amendments that would have addressed all of the issues that people are still wrestling with today, that opportunity that they had to do the right thing wasn't done. And I was on your show and I made it very clear at that time what we needed was a change of government. We tried to change the government in terms of their approach, but we never could do that. So it came down to simply this. If you can't change the government, you change the government. And that's what we were hell-bent on doing. Mm-hmm. And that's where the Sinn Féin drive was needed, because we worked very, very hard. And I got involved again back in November of last year, and we put together the People's Document. The People's Document was what we believed to be the definition of a true 100% redress. We worked damn hard with Sinn Féin. Because why Sinn Féin? Because they were the only opposition party that had a chance of making a dent in the formation of the next government,
yep.
A serious dent and possibly leave it. And for that reason, we had to go down that road.
Of course, I'm not criticising, but that's if the dust settled,
yeah.
they delivered. And often, you know, parties don't deliver, but I suppose you never know unless you give someone a chance. What does this mean for the defective block campaign now? Because unless something miraculous happens, very surprising happens, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have an incredibly strong mandate. They're going to be at sort of 86, 87 votes, which is what's required to form a government. They're going to be bolstered by probably 10, 12 independents and will be in a very, very strong position to absorb people giving up the party whip, having it removed, or, the other votes of no confidence or what have you. So they're in a very, very strong position. The people of Ireland and Donegal have returned them there. Sinn Féin are facing 4 or 5 years of opposition, which means, you know, now and again, these issues will be raised and they'll be debated. And you know what people say. They'll say we need end to end. And then the government say we've given you a good scheme. It's we'll review it and it's increased by such and such. So that's the political landscape for the next 5 years. Of course, Charles Ward will go down there. He'll walk the Dáil. He is an affected homeowner. He will be a voice for homeowners down there. But as an individual with the power of the government, what he can achieve in real terms might be difficult for him. So where does that leave? I can't see a situation where you can bring 30,000 people to Dublin again, right? So where does that actually leave the defective block campaign as a collection of individuals going forward? Is this the end of that part of trying to achieve 100% redress? I'm not being negative. I'm just trying to find out what the reality of the landscape is now for the next 5 years.
Yeah, I think we have to be cognizant of the fact that what we needed was a change of government to make this happen. And, you know, there's no misalignment there in terms of that desire between, you know, the 100% redress party from anybody that's in the leading campaigns outside of that party. Everybody was aligned on that. What we needed was a change of government. That didn't happen. That wasn't through lack of effort out of Donegal. I do think the other affected counties could have done more. You know, you look at the drive that was put on by Donegal and you look to see where was that paralleled elsewhere. It didn't happen. So, you know, there is a bit of, you know, you reap what you sow. As far as the campaign is concerned, it needs, and I think it will, grow legs as other counties become deeper in the mire that we're in Donegal. And that will happen over time. We've got 13 affected counties. You know, there's no there's nothing to say that 100% redress party, that this is basically, you know, the acorn here of the oak tree that eventually grows, because there's nothing to say that, albeit 5 years, which is the unfortunate part for Donegal, people who are already so far down this journey of defective concrete blocks, but for the other counties that are still out there in the early doors of it, another 5 years' time, you could see that you've got four or five other counties returning TDs into the 100% redress party as well. So I believe there are legs on all of that. For us in Donegal, I think, you know, we have got to suck up the fact that we could have done more. I do believe that 58% was a disappointment for us. It was a letdown to a lot of people that drove very, very hard on this campaign. Thankfully, we got Charles Ward over the line, and he's down there, and he'll fly the flag and keep it going. But as I say, he's going to have a very, very difficult job ahead for all the reasons you've outlined. Well, we might have two Fianna Fáil TDs, including a sitting minister, but that hasn't manifested itself in the returns you would have expected from the cabinet table. And simply because, you know, it seemed to be career limiting to go push for the type of scheme that we know we need, that I believe the minister knows we need, but he may not feel that appetite around the table was there for it. And it wasn't going to go out too far in a limb.
Well,
to make that
who's
happen.
To say how things go? Because, I mean, he was a minister. He's no longer a minister. He's an outgoing minister. Who's to say how the portfolios break down? And who's to say, who's to say how vocal he can be if he's not the minister, or what his views might be? I don't know. They might be the exact same, but we just don't know. And we'll just have to wait for things to unfold. Michael, thank you very much indeed for that.
Sorry, Greg. Just something I do want to say before we go as well. I think that, just taking the moment here to go back and just reflect on what we got out of this here. You know, we have to give and go back on the journey where we had Anne Owens and Eileen Doherty. At the very beginning, we had the Mike Action Group in my own time there with Eamon Jackson. We have Lisa Hone. We have got the likes of Lisa Hila, who's the 100% redress guru and behind Paddy Diver's page. And we've got Roisin Gallagher there. And, you know, all of that contributed at different stages and with different levels of effectiveness, depending on the era that we happened to be in during that journey, that left a 100% redress party now. Nobody should underestimate the importance of the fact that we have got that over the line. And in parallel to that, we still have the Coleman legal case that, you know, we just anxiously await to see what goes on there as well, because that's the other legal stance on this, to see where this all takes us. So I don't think it's a case of over and out by any matter or means. I think the battle goes on. It could have been an awful lot quicker through the likes of a Sinn Féin returned lead component of government, but the fight's not over, and it certainly isn't over whenever you've got somebody of Charles Ward's stature down there, personality, fire in his belly, can articulate himself well. Well, I think we watch the space.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from, but we all know how politics works, and let's just hypothesise and say Sinn Féin were the lead party. And let's just say that they were looking to go in to coalition with Fianna Fáil. That would be the scenario to get it over the line. And let's say that one of Fianna Fáil's red lines was to maintain this current scheme. Like, do you think Sinn Féin would have walked away from the possibility of getting into government if Micah redress, if defective concrete block scheme was Fianna Fáil's red line?
That was their undertaking given to us, and they would have found it very difficult to do a U-turn in that, because that's something that we would have turned on them as quick as they turned on the policy. That was the centrepiece of everything that had been pushed for Sinn Féin, be under no illusion.
Locally.
It wasn't a Sinn Féin government.
It wasn't mentioned once nationally, locally, but it wasn't mentioned once
nationally. No, but I think, yes, but nationally we're dealing with the fact that we have a lot of people down the country believing the spin that the likes of Niall Blaney was putting out there and Charlie McConnell was putting out there. You know, you'll build a hell of a house for 500,000. There's people that's only getting 250,000 of a grant that's still 50,000 short. They're getting nowhere near it. You're aware of all that, Greg. You're aware of all of that. And that I think that was the difficulty. I think Sinn Féin had to get into government, first of all, before they could start to educate around why this scheme needs what they're going to give us. Because it wasn't just us. It was all the defective apartments and everything else in Dublin. But they needed to get in to make that happen. And that unfortunately, didn't
happen.
Transpire.
No, that the people had their say. Finally, what does this mean for you in terms of a vocal component of this campaign?
Well, I think we have got 100% redress party. I think we need to respect that, and I think we need to allow them to go develop whatever, you know, channels, pathways that they believe is appropriate. I think that's extremely important. I think myself, Paddy Diver, and others have really given everything we can on here. I don't think we'll be not answering the phone to anybody that asks and lifts the phone looking for advice or direction. But I think we need to respect the fact there's a 100% redress party out there now, and we wish them all the best.
Okay, people can read from that. It's pretty obvious, I think, what Michael was saying. All right, thanks for that. Back with more after these. All right, good morning to you, Charlie. Sorry for holding you. What's your view?
Good morning, Greg. How are you doing? Greg, I'm one of these people that didn't vote.
Why?
And I'll be blunt honest with you, Greg. I will not be voting in this country until we have a referendum, first of all, and get out of the EU. That has to be done, because no matter who you vote for, they're just EU muppets. We're told what to do in this country. We're run by the EU. We're told how to farm, how to fish, how to everything. And it's so unfair. It's so unfair to our farmers. It's so unfair to our fishermen. It's so unfair to our county and to our country. And all I see is an EU dumping ground for refugees. We're not looking after the Irish people. We're not looking after our hospitals or looking after the things that we should be looking after. So the reason why I didn't vote was because I'm not funding people's holiday homes. And that's all you're doing by voting. You're funding their holidays. You're funding their...
In relation to all of that, though, Charlie, you know, you're saying just what lots of people said, versions of it within the county and across the country. And the people of Ireland spoke, and you're in, if you look at the figures, you're in a real minority of your view, Charlie. That is not how the majority of people in this county or country think. And we can gauge that through the council and the general elections. I mean, it's a very vocal sort of call, Charlie, and there are people that are very passionate about it, but you're few and far between in reality in terms of the electorate.
Well, Greg, I just think that's down to, I don't know if it's a case of a lack of education, a lack of being in the real world and living
it,
in the real Ireland.
But people hear it. People live there.
It's one thing, Greg, but we're not acting on it. I'll give you an example of how we're not acting on it. We still, and there wasn't one mention of it on the radio over the whole scam of it, and until we have somebody in this country like a Donald Trump that wants to make Ireland great, that wants to make our country great, I don't want to make the EU great. I want to make my country, the country I was born in, great. Not any other thing. I don't care about anybody else. I don't care about any other country. I don't care about wars. I don't care. I want my country great. I want Ireland great.
And how does it achieve that, Charlie? I mean, we are a small, very small economy, right, with the size of a city right across the country. That's effectively what our population is. So we have to be a very open economy. We can't be... We don't have the industry... we don't have the resources, we don't have the oil, we don't have the gas, we don't have the resources to build a wall around Ireland effectively and be that prosperous country that you talk of. 1/4 of a million people here are employed through foreign direct investment. That's how That's what's keeping the economy going. There's a lot of money in the country. You might not like how it's spent. Some people don't, some people do. But the bottom line is look what's happened to Britain. Britain, whatever about life here at the moment, in Britain, they're absolutely banjaxed. I know people over there, I talk to them. They left the EU and it's been an absolute unmitigated disaster. They thought they could leave the EU and they thought they could leave the EU and control immigration, by the way. In the last 2 months, more people have come over the borders in small boats in Britain in the last few months than did in 8 months under the previous government. So leaving the EU doesn't mean that all of a sudden people can't arrive in your country. And also this notion that all of a sudden you can become really sort of authoritarian and militant and start throwing people back from where they came from. That's not how it works, Charlie. It's a fantasy because we can see elsewhere. The people there's not all of a sudden people not coming up from Mexico into the United States because Donald Trump is in power. It's a fallacy.
No, Greg, listen. The policies that man's going to put into place the second he sits in that chair is the policies that I'm looking for our country and for our counties. And I'm talking across everything that he has, that he's hoping to do. For example, there's only going to be two genders in America when he sits down in that chair. And in that situation, we wouldn't have a teacher out of a job down the country in a Catholic school for not referring to a child as them. This country has went woke. This country, I think we've lost the plot in this country. I really do. And for people coming on there shouting about your woman shouting "Chuck your la" and this nonsense to her campaign, it's diabolical in this day and age.
Are you not sure that you've been whipped up, Charlie, into this way of thinking that you run? Whoever you follow on X, whoever you're in a Facebook groups for, you're probably in a Telegram group. Are you sure you're on a small group of people that have whipped yourself up into this fear? When you woke up this morning, right? Did you think the first thing when you got out of bed in the morning? Did you think, okay, well, there's only two genders? Because that's not what the people of this country woke up. They woke up and thought about real stuff. How am I going to get the kids to school? How am I going to pay the mortgage? Is there ice out there? You know, a lot of people aren't constantly fixated on Enoch Burke and how many genders there are because they're getting on with, and it seems to be reflected in the polls, they're getting on with their day-to-day life. People didn't vote in great numbers for people that are articulating what you're articulating. I'm just having a chat with you, by the way, Charlie. I'm not trying to shut you down. Come on.
No, I personally think you're shutting me down because the reason why I'm using it as an example of what Donald Trump is going to do to make his country great again. Now, all I was using that for was an example of the things that he's going to put into place to make America great. And people were on crying about them taking businesses from Ireland back to America. Well, 100%. He wants to make his country great. Mm-hmm. And I would, honest to God, I want somebody to come to my country. I want somebody to come into power in this country that wants to make Ireland great. Not to stand on a doll shouting over the cross at each other and a couple hours later they're sitting and having lunch and having a laugh about it because they know that there's nothing going to be done about
it. If we left the EU, okay, and if our relationship broke down with the EU in terms of trade and all what have you, where would we generate the income from, Charlie? Just basically, a basic question, right? I know I'm not an accountant or what have you, but where would we make it great? Where would we get the money from?
I think, Greg, we have a lot of things to offer now. For example, our tourism, which we don't do enough for.
Okay.
Yeah. We don't do enough for our tourism board in this country.
What else?
You have a lot of whiskey stories across that are popping up here and there and everywhere.
Where would you sell the whiskey?
Across the world, the same as everybody else.
The whiskey industry are absolutely bricking it because Donald Trump's tariffs effectively are closing the Irish whiskey market into America. That is the concern. So Donald Trump's tariffs are having a potential, if they do come in, a devastating impact on our exports because America's one of our biggest trading partners. In fact, it's the biggest market. So that's whiskey. What else would we be doing to generate the income to make us great again?
I think farming. If our farming
where would
was
we sell
properly,
the meat? Where would we sell the meat? Because
our
EU
our
is
fishing as well.
Yeah, but where would we sell the fish? Where would we sell it to? The EU is about firstly, Britain is saying the same thing, right? So they've got their own stuff; they're doing that internally. The EU is negotiating a deal with Brazil. The Polish are just ready and waiting to start pumping all of their beef and what have you into the EU. The price of our, for us to have markets, the price of the beef and the lamb and all of that stuff would be driven down so low because we've got nowhere to sell it to. We've got, there's trading agreements between the EU and New Zealand and Australia and the EU and China and what have you. I mean, we'd have some markets, but where would we sell our meat to? These are real questions that need to be answered if we're going to progress, Charlie, the type of Ireland that you want.
But, Greg, look at what's been in government for as long as what's been in and what changes have we. We've still got... Do you know what's a sin? Go down to Killybegs and look what fishing trawlers is lying in a port.
It's terrible.
Because they're only allowed to fish 7% of it in their waters.
It's brutal.
So we need somebody to... We need, if we're going to stay... Okay, we'll stay in the EU. But we need somebody to fight our corner. We need somebody to fight and say, no, this is Ireland. We need more. We need more of our fishing ground. We need more of our... So, yes, fair enough, you have an argument for the EU. But we need somebody to fight that. I'm not going to vote for somebody that's not fighting for our corner. Mm-hmm. They're not doing... Look how long we've been in politics and nothing's been done for us. Nothing. Greg, the amount of Irish people that are leaving today seeking better work and different countries and so on and so forth is diabolical. And the thing as well, Greg, that really, really... This really gets me is the housing situation. There's no houses being built. And then you have a situation then of rental properties. Nobody will accept government aid from anybody. They're all looking for £800-900 mm-hmm. of or euros of people's money, and they'll not accept half, or they'll not accept anything that's going. Every house that's been renovated or done up is all Airbnbs. This country, we need somebody to put things into place to help the people, the Irish people, the people of mm-hmm. Ireland. And that's what I want. I want somebody to help our country and our people.
I get you, Charlie.
I don't see it within our government. The biggest mistake ever happened, as I can say, Greg, for me, I think the EU's done more damage than the English ever did in this country. We had a rail system from the west coast of Donegal to Letterkenny whenever the English was in power in this country. And I don't care who hears me saying it, I don't think the EU's doing Ireland. I don't even think they even notice us. Right, I don't think they're helping us at all in anything.
All right, Charlie.
And that's the one thing,
that's
Greg, I get what you're saying, and I appreciate your argument. Thank you very much.
No. And Eamon McGee was there for the Irish Freedom Party. They went out of Europe. I think Herman Kelly heads up that party. So there were options for you here. But that's your view. To not vote is a vote sometimes as well. Charlie, it's been great having a chat with you. Thanks for teasing it out, and thanks for...
Very much. I appreciate that.
Thanks for allowing us the back and forth to have a bit of a chat about it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care, Charlie. Bye-bye. Pat Carter, are you still there, Pat?
Yes, Greg.
Good stuff. Thanks.
I've got to hear from you.
Yeah, right, okay.
Okay. Did you get a brief world man say?
Go ahead, Pat.
I'm going to cause a tsunami in this country, in this county. I think Fine Gael should seriously swallow their pride. And I think they should seriously consider going there. Approach Sinn Féin to form a government, possibly with support from the Labour Party. I feel it's no different from the current situation of the DUP and Sinn Féin in the Stormont Executive, or the Tory Party formed a coalition with the Liberal Democrats in Britain. I don't see what the problem is at all. I'm sure, I mean, Simon Harris, an intelligent man, and he's futuristic. He's always forward-looking, unlike the gentleman you're just speaking to. I'm sure Sinn Féin and Labour Party have already swapped position papers. This is on the rumour mill already. I'm sure somebody in Sinn Féin will say, why don't you get in touch with him?
Okay, we'll see. As unlikely as it might seem, you never know. Pat Carter, thank you very much indeed for that. Right, our second competition running today, Cadbury Secret Santa week-long promotion. It's year 7 of Cadbury Secret Santa, where you can send a Cadbury chocolate bar to someone in secret for free. Still yet to receive one. Secrecy is the key, as the Cadbury generosity comes from sending a gift without expecting thanks. There are QR codes on special posters around the country, and there are 22,000 bars to give away. How do you enter? Well, to celebrate the return of Secret Santa, we have two huge hampers of chocolate to give away, plus a €50 voucher every day to be won. So you could win a €50 voucher each day this week, or an end-of-week prize of one of these huge hampers. If they're anything like the ones from last year, they are unbelievable. All you need to do is tell us why you would want to surprise someone special with a Secret Santa bar this year. Why do they deserve it? And they may deserve much more than a chocolate bar. Do you get where I'm going with this? What good reason do you have to surprise someone with a Cadbury Secret Santa bar? Tell us about someone in your life who deserves your Secret Santa bar this year. And you could win €50 today and also go into a draw to win a Cadbury hamper for you and your Secret Santa. We have a hamper for you and a hamper for the person you are nominating. It's all thanks to Cadbury Secret Santa. And don't forget, if you want to send a bar to someone in secret, look out for the special posters all around the country. So effectively, what we're asking you to do is tell us about someone in your life, why they would deserve a special treat. Why would they deserve a special treat? So it's another opportunity to say something nice about someone and to appreciate them. If you're the daily winner, you'll win a €50 voucher. And if you're the weekly winner, both you and that special person will receive a beautiful big Cadbury hamper. Simple as that. 086 60 25,000. That is the WhatsApp and text number. Right, okay. I would also vote to get out of Europe, says a listener. We're utterly under the control of other people like Germany and other EU countries. Britain was right to get out when they did. Not everyone with this opinion is on Facebook. Some people get their information purely from TV, newspapers and radio. They're not on social media at all. I believe in leaving the European Union and I don't even have a smartphone. Okay, that's interesting. And I don't say it as a criticism about that. I don't say it as a criticism. I'm just trying to look at, you know, I'm looking at people's opinions, how they're vocalised and how powerful they are, and then how they transfer into votes come election time. Hi, Greg. Ask Michael, why did Sinn Féin not endorse the People's Document when he's promoting Sinn Féin? Charlie McConnell Logue and his colleagues received a terrible bashing and backstabbing from the Mica group during this election campaign over the past 3 weeks. There was no call for all this. Thank God his seat was saved. And I think there is certainly a school of thought out there that that some of the personal nature of the criticisms of Charlie McConnell Logue perhaps in a way emboldened his support. I don't know the ins and outs of that. All right, that's the first hour of the 9 till noon show. Out of the way, we'll be not out of the way. We enjoyed it. We'll be back with much more after we take a break for the news and obituary notices.